Welcome to the Royal Caribbean Blog Podcast, your weekly look into the world of Royal Caribbean cruising. I'm your host, Matt Hotchberg, and this is episode number 527. Today, I want to talk all about Perfect Day at Cocoa Key. It's quite incredible how much has been changing there, and I wanted to share with you how to plan your day at Perfect Day. Here we go. Perfect Day at Cocoa Key has changed a lot, even just in the last couple of years, you know, with different expansions, new additions. How do you plan your day? How do you plan your experience there, especially if you've never been there before, going there for the first time, or maybe it's been a while since you've been to Perfect Day? Either way, how do you plan your day? And certainly, this is something that I think about a lot, because cruising as much as I do, there are going to be inevitably a lot of stops at Perfect Day at Cocoa Key. Royal Caribbean really changed up its game plan. You know, years ago, a stop at Cocoa Key, or even Lapity for that matter, was a little rarer than it is today. These days, it's pretty rare to take a Caribbean cruise that does not stop at Perfect Day, or at least Lapity for that matter. In any case, when you're planning a cruise that stops at Perfect Day, there's a lot of considerations as to how you're going to spend your day. Where should you go? That's really one of the top questions I get a lot, especially for someone who's never been there. And there are a lot of compelling choices. Now, first and foremost, let's start with the fact that Perfect Day is Royal Caribbean's private island. There is no cost to walk off the ship. This is not like other ports in which you necessarily need a shore excursion, but it is like other ports in the sense that the ship docks there and you can walk off the ship and explore on your own. You don't need a tour in order to do something here. You could simply walk off the ship at your leisure and go to any number of complimentary venues, or just simply walk and not even do anything. You don't have to go in the water. There's no obligation. This isn't like, you know, being dropped off at Walt Disney World, where in order to get into the gate, you have to pay an admission fee and then you have to do something. Like, this is more of a, really just like any other port of call in a sense, other than the fact that it's all run by Royal Caribbean. So there are no third-party vendors here. There's no third-party excursions. Like, if you go to Cozumel, there are Royal Caribbean excursions and there are things you can book on your own. In the case of Cocoa Key, this is all through Royal Caribbean. So there's a number of different places. And if you look at a map of Perfect Day, Cocoa Key, this would really help a lot, especially if you've never been there before, so you can kind of get a sense of where things are. Now, we do have a full walkthrough video tour of Perfect Day at Cocoa Key on our YouTube channel, which, by the way, we updated this year in 2024. We had a tour that was a couple of years old, and we said, you know, it's been a little while, even though that much has changed, but enough has that we want to make sure it's still up to date. So you check out the full walkthrough tour on our YouTube channel, Royal Caribbean Blog, over there. So how do you plan your day at Perfect Day? Essentially, there's a couple of considerations. First and foremost, who are you traveling with, right? Because if you're going with, you know, kids or you're traveling with an extended family, that may dictate, in a lot of cases, where you want to go. Now, there's a blend of things that cost extra and things that are complimentary. And I think when I plan my day, I usually start with a really basic consideration, which is, well, first of all, who am I cruising with? And what type of environment do we want to spend our day in? So if we're with my kids as an example, well, Hideaway Beach, which is the new adults-only area, is probably out of the question. If I'm not traveling with my kids, well, then Hideaway Beach is an option, right? In fact, if I'm not traveling with my kids at all, then I might lean towards Hideaway Beach in general. There's also the consideration, do you want to spend your day primarily in the pool or the beach? Keeping in mind, by the way, you don't have to just do one thing. This is not a single-threaded type experience. You can certainly hop between them. We'll talk about that a little later in this episode. But in a lot of cases, some people might say, oh, I really want to go to the beach. Like, I'm going to the Bahamas, I want to go to the beach. Other people, like me, might say, I like the beach, but I really like the pool better. And the idea of spending a pool day sounds like a great time, and that's where I would gravitate towards. So you can kind of make some decisions based on that. You can also make some decisions based on, do you want to necessarily spend extra? Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, I'd be willing to spend extra if it's worth it, but I'm not necessarily like, if I'm not, I want to spend money, or I absolutely don't want to spend money. I think more so some people are of the camp that say, I don't want to spend any extra money, and that's going to obviously preclude them from going to the Cocoa Beach Club or Hideaway Beach or doing any other add-ons like the water park or a zip line or things like that. I think in most cases, you're probably going to, when you look at the different areas, and there are a couple of key areas. There's Chill Island, there is Thrill Island, there is the Cocoa Beach Club, there is Hideaway Beach, there is Breezy Bay, there's Harbor Beach, and there's South Beach. Those are the primary places you could go. Now, there's advantages and disadvantages to all of them, you know, in terms of location, how noisy or crowded it is, how quiet it is, whether or not kids are allowed in there, whether or not there's an extra cost. And when we go to Perfect Day at Cocoa Key, I think in a lot of cases, we think about, well, what's really of interest to us and how we want to spend our day. And depending on the time of year and whom we're traveling with, that can generally go in one direction or another. Now, as I mentioned, you don't have to spend all day in one place. You can start off your day at the Oasis Lagoon, which is the freshwater pool. And then, in the afternoon, maybe head over to the beach. In fact, on our last visit to Kokuki, that's exactly what we did. We started off at Oasis Lagoon. And then, as the day progressed, we went over to the Snack Shack for lunch, which is located near the Oasis Lagoon and over towards Breezy Bay. And since we're already at Breezy Bay, why not spend some time over at the beach over there? And that's an option that you always can do as well. So I don't feel like you need to do necessarily, you know, a stay in one spot. Now, the extra cost things can be a little tricky, right? There are full day extra cost experiences and there's like partial experiences. Now, if you're going to go to the Cocoa Beach Club or Hideaway Beach or Thrill Island, those are full day experiences. And if you are going to purchase the admission to either of those places, you should plan to spend the entire day there, because otherwise I feel like you're not going to get your money's worth. Certainly you could go to the Cocoa Beach Club and do a zip line, or go to Hideaway Beach and do a jet ski. But I feel like the time away from spending time in those three primary venues is going to really negate the value of your time there. As in to say, you can't have a good time, or it's your money and what have you. But I personally wouldn't recommend it. I would say that if you're going to go to the Cocoa Beach Club, Thrill Island, or Hideaway Beach, there's no reason to purchase an additional excursion option like a jet ski or snorkeling tour or parasailing or something to that effect, right? I think for those experiences, you're better off just kind of, you know, sticking with where you are. In terms of pricing, is it worth it for those three places? You know, the prices have gone up considerably. Hideaway Beach is by far the best value, right now anyway. The pricing, if you can get it under $50 a person at Hideaway Beach, to me that's a steal of a deal, as long as you're okay with the fact that, of course, you can't bring your kids there. So if you have no kids, that's cool. But if you have children, well, that's not an option, right? But Hideaway Beach, I like the value of it because it's really got Royal Caribbean's best ideas right now. I love the pool, the beach, the cabanas, the restaurants. It's really good. Cocoa Beach Club is fantastic. I really love it. It's secluded. It's limited capacity. The restaurant there alone is like almost worth the cost to get in there. And then, of course, you have the amazing cabanas there as well if you'd like to. The problem with Cocoa Beach Club is the pricing has gone like bananas. It went from expensive to like, I can't believe how expensive that is. And this is especially true of the cabanas. Even the day passes, you know, where you're paying, you know, $200 or even $300 a person to get in. And listen, I'm all for secluded venues. I stay in plenty of suites for a lot of good reasons. I don't see the value in a lot of cases of the Cocoa Beach Club. Now, this isn't necessarily a value proposition. In fact, maybe more like a suite where you say, well, this isn't about getting your dollar value out of it. It's more of a you prefer to splurge. You want to treat yourself. You want to be somewhere exclusive. The fact that it costs, you know, $600 or more per, you know, for a couple to go, or you know, thousands of dollars, is just how you want to spend your money because you work hard. You know, you're cruising is a big part of your vacation experience and you want to be able to enjoy your time. Far be it from me or anyone to tell you how to spend your money. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's just that some of the pricing, especially the cabanas, especially, I mean, some of the cabana prices right now for like the over the water cabanas are like $4,000 or $5,000. That's like more than a lot of cruises, quite frankly. And that's only for a couple hours. So, but again, it's your day, it's how you want to spend it. But in the grand scheme of things, I think your money can go far longer, further in other places at Perfect Day. In terms of Thrill Water Park has also gotten expensive. And this is part of the issue for me personally, as I live in Orlando. And here in Orlando, we have no shortage of water parks. And for like admission to one day at Thrill Island, I can probably get like an annual pass at a water park where I live. Now, that's not a fair comparison if you don't live in Orlando, because you're like, well, Matt, I don't live there, so that's not really an option for me. And that's totally cool there. You know, you got to play that game of how much the price is, where the value is for you. The pricing has gotten a little pricey there, to say the least. But if going on a bunch of water slides and that wave pool is worth it to you, and I think it is, it is a lot of fun. There's no denying that. Then it can be absolutely worth the money. So you've got some considerations there. And I think off the bat, you probably want to figure out, do you want to go to one of these three extra cost places? And then figure out, do you want to do any of the extra cost activities there? Like a zip line, snorkeling, a parasailing ride, swimming with the pigs, things of that nature. Some of these are like an hour. Some of these are a couple hours. And these are ways to really augment your day. There isn't a right or wrong answer here. This is more about what you're looking to do. When we go to Perfect Day, we rarely do those extra cost items. And maybe this is because we're spoiled and we go a lot. But I find that the extra cost things here, number one, there are better places to do them. Like snorkeling Coco Key is not that the best place on earth to snorkel by any stretch of the imagination. Parasailing and some of the zip lining, you can do in other ports. Now, if you're doing a short 3 or 4 night cruise, well, this is the only option you got. But if you're doing a 7 night cruise and you're going to Roatan, as an example, the snorkeling and the zip lining is way better over there. But for some people, it's not about like, hey, I don't need to be Jacques Cousteau and rediscover some lost Caribbean reef. I just want to go and see some fish. It's because it's fun to do it with my kids. And that's exactly what they offer here. And they are nice to do that. So kind of figure out, do you want to do these extra cost items? And then figure out where you want to go. I think, again, it's a good idea to have at least a place to go in the morning. I think it's also important, speaking of the morning, to get off the ship earlier than you might think. There are plenty of seats and umbrellas around Perfect Day, but you might struggle in some of the places to find one that's anywhere near where everything's happening. Like, as an example, let's use South Beach. South Beach is a very popular choice to go to because it kind of isn't quite party vibe, isn't quite, you know, quiet, but there's a lot of activities. But if you roll into South Beach at like, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning, you're going to walk quite a distance down the beach to find an open chair. That's not necessarily a problem for some people, but I think in general, it's nice to have a seat that's more strategically located near like, you know, the bathrooms and the restaurants, things like that. So from that standpoint, I still think you're better off getting off the ship early if you're going to one of these free venues like, you know, the Chill Island or Oasis Lagoon and being able to get a seat there. Certainly, getting off the ship around 9 a.m. is always a good time. If you get off earlier than that, that's fantastic. But of course, keeping in mind that, you know, getting up that early is a bit of a struggle on a vacation. I get it. Then when you're there, I like to play it by ear. Again, if you have a shore excursion, like you're going jet skiing at 11 o'clock, well, then you have jet skiing. And by the way, speaking of activities, let's circle back for a second. Ideally, plan them as early as you possibly can. The tropics are notorious for weather changing. And if you're going during the warmer months of the year, this is probably May through November, maybe even December, afternoon storms, thunderstorms, are not uncommon. Now, there's no telling when they'll happen. They're usually very, very short-lived. But in the grand scheme of things, if you have the choice, I would recommend that you pick a time as early in the morning as possible. Number one, it's going to be less hot early in the morning. Number two, the storms tend to roll in the afternoon. And so I feel like that is going to be your best bet to ensure that you can actually do it. It won't be postponed or canceled because of weather. So that's kind of where I'm going with that strategy there. Then once you get to the island, spend your day as you see fit. You know, there's nothing wrong, by the way, if you get to Chill Island and this is your favorite place and you just want to enjoy that all day, more power to you. This is not a whirlwind tour that you need to see all the sights. You're not in Paris. This is just a relaxing day or a fun day or both for you. So play it by ear is really a good thing. But when you kind of maybe feel like, well, I've had my fill of this space, or you might want to see some more, there's a couple ways to do it. Number one, you could, before committing to anything, hop on the tram. There's a couple bunch of trams that run around Perfect Day. And you can simply, every spot has a tram stop in there. And you can hop on there and just take a circle tour. Like, you know, it'll bring you back eventually to where you started and see where these things are. So you can kind of visualize, oh, okay, well, the pool's got this going on there. And, you know, South Beach has got this. Like, you can kind of see it for yourself and get a sense of it. So think of it like a recon mission, right? But this is especially helpful if you've never been there before. Of course, you know, our YouTube channel helps a lot with providing that kind of video tour. But I think in a lot of cases, maybe the vibe, maybe that day you're visiting, there's something happening that's, you know, that brings more energy to one place or another, that might be of interest to you. And then, you know, as the day goes on, especially once you get past about lunchtime, let's call it 1 o'clock. Past 1 o'clock, people start heading back to the ship. Now, you're probably going to be a Perfect Day until at least, I'm going to guess, 4 o'clock, 4:30 might be the all aboard time. And the afternoon hours can really be an advantageous time to take to go to places that might have been busier earlier in the day. This is especially true of the swim bar over at Oasis Lagoon, the floating bar at South Beach, and some of the better chairs positions, if you will, at Chill Island. Again, it's not a hard and fast rule, and people are having a good time, they're not going to necessarily leave, but you know, basically crowds build throughout the day up till about 11 or a.m. or noon. By about noon, everyone's pretty much where they're going to be for the day, right? And then around 1 o'clock, the people that were there all morning and ate lunch are like, all right, I need to get back to the ship now. For whatever reason, they're tired, they want to shower, they've had enough, kids are yelling, who knows what. You can, you know, head back at that point, take advantage of what there is to do. I also kind of skipped over an important aspect of this day, and that is if you've got kids, some of the other complimentary venues. The Splashaway Bay and Captain Jill's Galleon should not be overlooked as places if you have young children. If you have kids that are under the age of 6, you might be able to stretch to about 8, but certainly 6 and under, this is a great place for kids. You might not enjoy it as much because it's kind of, you know, it's more about the kids than it is about you, but you probably already, it's not a newsflash to you as a parent. Anyway, the point of the story is that as you spend your day there, you're going to notice that Splashaway Bay and Captain Jill's Galleon are opportunities for your little kids to run around, get soaked, splash, and slide, and it's complimentary. So if you have kids that are under, you know, 6 or 7, number one, through a water park is a waste of money for you, unless you have older kids. Granted, you might get more value out of it as an adult, but the point is that let's assume you don't have kids of that age, and it's just you and you get younger kids. There's really nothing wrong with spending your day over at Captain Jill's, or at least making a stop over there in Splashaway Bay. It's going to be fantastic for kids of that age. Really, really good stuff there. So don't overlook that. And then for lunch, there are a number of venues. You know, there's a couple different venues, and they're all, many of them are the same. There's, first of all, there's Snack Shack. There's a couple different locations around. Perfect Day, there's one at Breezy Bay. There's one within the water park. There's one within Hideaway Beach, although it has a different name in there. Anyway, those are really good. You have Skipper's Grill and Chill Grill. It's the exact same menu, just a different name over there. And there's the South Beach. Sorry, I knew there was one more Snack Shack. There's a Snack Shack over at South Beach. The food, the complimentary food is really good. Years ago, it used to just be burgers and hot dogs, and I hated it. And we used to, if I was doing this podcast back then, I would have said, hey, you know what, go back to the ship and get lunch. But this is not the case here. The food is really good and included. So definitely take advantage of those venues. They're all served buffet style, or at least, you know, come up as much as you want. There's no limit there. So definitely plan on having your lunch somewhere on the island and be able to enjoy that. I love the Snack Shack. I think I like the food items at Snack Shack better, but I also appreciate at Chill Grill or Skipper's Grill, you can go and make yourself like a little like salad. Like I like to make my own little Chipotle bowl, or Chipotle-esque bowl, if you will, with rice and beans and chicken and guacamole. It's salsa. It's so good. Anyway, you know, explore both. See what's available there. It's nice. There's never much of a line to contend with. It's pretty easy to do that. And I think in general, when it comes to planning your day at Perfect Day, the most important thing is to have a game plan to start off with. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, crazy. You don't have to like list out, you know, 800 steps. Just have like, okay, we're going to get the ship early because we want to get a good spot. We want to go to this place first. And keeping in mind, by the way, that you've already figured out if you want to pre-book anything. By the way, speaking of pre-booking, that's also important. If you're going to do Cocoa Beach Club, the water park, Hideaway Beach, anything that costs extra, Perfect Day, book it before your cruise. It will cost more on board the ship, or more importantly, it'll sell out by the time you get on board the ship. So definitely pre-book. And hopefully with these tips, you can have a great visit to Perfect Day at Cocoa Key. All right, friends, time to answer your listener emails. This is part of the episode where I dive into the emails that you sent me and answer the questions right here on the podcast. Starting with Virginia Neener. Hi, Matt. My husband and I discovered your videos and podcasts last year while we were planning our very first cruise. We had an amazing time on Harmony with our two girls, and we're so grateful for all your tips and tricks. We couldn't have done it without your knowledge. We're going on a lure this season in July, and we were able to secure a suite with a genie. It's truly a YOLO moment. Our question is this. Do we go ahead and book our shore excursions, or do we wait and have the genie do that? Does the genie have more options? We're going to Nassau, and being Floridians, we weren't going to explore much, but do the Atlantis for our girls. Any tips, suggestions, or ideas would be welcomed. Also, my husband and I have created a saying, what would Matt say when it comes to any cruise decision? Thanks for all your guidance. Enjoy the Icon. We're booked on for the summer of 2025. Virginia, thanks for the email. For shore excursions, even though you are staying in a Star Class room with the genie, I don't think there's really any advantage to waiting for the genie to do it. In fact, I think it's the opposite. When it comes to shore excursions in general, you want to pre-book. Number one, the price is probably cheaper. Number two, if it does sell out, you'd be able to bypass that by booking it early. So, no, Virginia, I would definitely book the shore excursions ahead of time. That's about all I would book ahead of time. Dining and activities, you can all wait till you get on board the ship to do that. In fact, you'll get an email from your genie in the weeks leading up to your cruise that can, you know, help sort that out. But In the meantime, I would definitely pre-book your shore excursions. Next email's from Dobie Adam. Hi, Matt. First, I want to say I've been watching your YouTube channel for well over a year now, and I often find your content very helpful. Not only helpful, I get to live a little vicariously through you on your adventures. We are newer to cruising and are already loyal Royal Caribbean fans. I took my first cruise in 2002, and then finally took my wife and son for the first time last year on Oasis back in March. Our cruise was such an amazing vacation, we booked our next one within a month of returning home. We also had such a great time that we inspired three other families to want to join us, and our cruise this year in April on Oasis includes nine other people. So here's the pondering question. Can we take walkie-talkies on the ship for us to communicate with each other? We're all spaced out with staterooms and only one person per family has an internet package. So the thought was, let's take walkie-talkies so we can check in and coordinate with each other. I've searched a few places, haven't found any definitive answer, and thought, I guarantee Matt would know this answer. If you can answer, I would greatly appreciate it. The answer to your question is, I mean, you can bring walkie-talkies. I don't recommend the walkie-talkies for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're annoying to other people. They're loud, obnoxious. Number two, they don't work that well unless you get one of the high-quality ones, like really, like, not consumer grade, but really good ones. Anyway, it's a waste of money because number three, most importantly, the Royal Caribbean app has a chat feature that's totally free. It used to cost money, now it's free. So just have everybody, at least one person in each family group, whatever, download the Royal Caribbean app. You can chat within there. It's totally fine for chatting and checking in, that kind of a thing. And considering that it's free, I think it's totally fine. Obviously, the ideal situation or a better scenario, I would say, is if one person in each family has the internet package, and then you could simply agree on an app to use, like, you know, WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, or even iMessage for that matter. But I still think that, you know, the Royal Caribbean app is totally fine for what you're trying to do there. So hopefully that answers your question there. Next question is from Don, who also has a question about the Royal Caribbean app. I'm new to the cruising industry. My husband is in his 40s and I recently turned 50. We travel often and are huge fans of vacationing in the Caribbean. We always stay in all-inclusive resorts and are usually more than satisfied. This year, we'll be attending our first cruise to Bermuda on Liberty of the Seas. We only booked the trip to celebrate our good friend's 20-year wedding anniversary. They booked it and invited some of their friends and family. After much deliberation, we decided to join them. With that being said, I sort of jumped all in on doing as much research as possible to understand how cruises work so that we can have the best time possible with as little stress and frustrations as possible. I've downloaded the Royal Caribbean app, and it seems that it is needed to fully experience the ship and its offerings. The problem I'm having is my husband does not want to download the app. He's the type of man that does not want to have his phone with him when he's trying to relax and enjoy vacation. He thinks we'll be okay with just having the app. I'm curious what you think. Do you think we'll be better served with us both utilizing the app in each of our phones? Thanks for the insight. Don, the truth is, honestly, you could have the app alone and your husband doesn't need to have it. The app primarily, at its core, the most important things you could do on one phone because one person can do the most important things for everybody within the same stateroom. So, for you, that's totally fine. The only reason your husband would need the app, need, not want, would be for messaging. There's, as I mentioned in the previous question, there's a messaging component to it. But, you know, certainly, Dawn, you could do that. You could do everything that's there. There's no need for him to have it in addition to you. As long as one of you has it, that's totally fine. No problem there. Next email is from Liz, a.k.a. Baked Alaska. First, thank you for your podcast and website. As seasoned travelers, your information keeps us up to date on the latest cruise trends, which, in this day of inflation and ever-changing offerings and itineraries, we are grateful for. We're always finding something new. If I got to choose who to have on my trivia team in the Schooner Bar, I'd pick you over Brad Pitt any day. My question, we'll be sailing on Ovation of the Seas in June of 24. We want to take the fast ferry from Skagway to Haines round trip for our port stop in Skagway. Ovation is scheduled to be in Skagway from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. We want to take the 8 a.m. ferry to Haines and return to Skagway at 3:45. The arrival time to Skagway before the 3:45 p.m. ferry is 1:45, which would not give us enough time to do a preferred activity in Haines. The Haines Skagway Fast Ferry Dock is in the small boat harbor right next to the railroad, so it's very close to where Ovation will dock. I think the Royal Caribbean excursions with passengers on the Fast Ferry would also have Ovation cruisers returning at the same time. In your opinion, is a scheduled Fast Ferry arrival time at 3:45 okay? Yeah, it's a tough one, because obviously, I'm assuming if the ferry's at 3:45, the issue that Liz is alluding to is, you know, will she get stuck in Haines and miss the ship? If the ferry's 3:45, and I forget how long it takes to get from Haines back to Skagway or vice versa, the only time I've ever done this is when we actually did a cruise last time on Serenade. We were in Alaska, and we started the morning in Skagway, and the ship literally left in the middle of the day and went over to Haines. But that was a cruise ship. It goes slower than a ferry, obviously. I mean, I don't know how long the ferry takes. I mean, 15, 30 minutes, something like that, I'm going to assume, right? In general, forget Alaska, forget Skagway, forget anything else. I always tell people, you know, I plan to always be back at the port 2 hours before all aboard time. Because all aboard time is you're already late. So if you're there from 7 to 5, I'm betting your all aboard time is 4:30. So in a perfect world, I'd be back. I plan to be back on the ship by 2:30. Now, you can, depending on the port, you know, you can kind of bend that rule a little bit. Like, you know, Cozumel is an example. As long as you're staying on the island, you're not going to the mainland. I mean, you can always hop in a cab and you're probably half an hour away at the most. So, you know, you can kind of play with that a little bit. And if you were staying in Skagway, where you can literally run back to the ship, you know, you could also bend that rule a bit. The problem is you've got a waterway and a schedule, a ferry, that you have no control over, right? If the ferry's on time, everything works on time, you're great. If not, you know, again, I don't know how long the ferry is here. And I understand your problem. If you back it up to the one before that, you don't have enough time. You're going to have like 3 or 4 hours at the most. And there's a big difference in those 2 hours between the 145 and 345 ferry. Would I do it? I know that if I suggested it to my wife, she'd probably say no. Because it's just, it's too close to for comfort for that kind of a turnaround there. Will people be doing it? Yeah, there'll be other people. I'm sure they'll be doing that, and it'll make it work there. I mean, I'm not sure if the fast ferry you can book through Royal Caribbean. Sometimes Royal Caribbean does like on your own excursions, and at least then that guards against, like, let's say you get back, you're on time, everything's cool, and the ferry breaks down, or the ferry's running late or something like that. If it's a Royal Caribbean excursion that you book this ferry through, then Royal Caribbean has your back to some extent that they'll wait for you. That would be the thing I would look for first, although I would bet you dollars to donuts they won't put you on the 345. They'll put you on the 145. They do this in St. John all the time in St. Thomas. So, yeah, you're like, you're not, like, if this were green, yellow, and red in terms of danger, you're in the yellow, almost in the red, but it's not quite red, if that makes sense. But anyway, thank you for the question there. Next question is from, I'm not going to say this name correctly, Soham, I'm hoping. Hi, Matt. I really enjoy listening to the Royal Caribbean Blog podcast. My family set to go on Wonder the Seas this summer and could not be more excited, especially since this is our first Royal Caribbean experience. I wanted to ask you for your opinion on a couple things. Number one, if you had to pick one of the onboard shows to watch, what would it be and why? On Wonder? Oh, that's a good question. The ice skating show. I like effectors. I think it's good. I've seen the effectors before in other shows. I think it's very repetitive. So if you've never seen the effectors, I would probably lean towards that. But the ice skating show never disappoints. I think the ice skating show is one of its strongest things. So probably that. But if you've never seen effectors on any other ship, see effectors. Number two, how early do I need to get to the Port Canaveral cruise terminal? Should we expect long lines and get there a little earlier than our scheduled arrival window? Or is it okay to arrive just during that time? Honestly, long lines, no. Whatever your time is, I would say 15 minutes beforehand if you got to, you know, park the car, drop things off. But, you know, probably about 15 minutes before whatever time your arrival window is would be totally fine. But I don't think you'll encounter any long lines. Royal Caribbean has really, especially recently, like the last year or two, has really gotten the embarkation process down in ports like Port Canaveral, Miami, Everglades, I mean, down to a T. Number three, how do dining reservations work for a 3-night dining package? Can reservations be made in advance or do you need to make them on board? Currently, you need to make them on board. So when you get on board the ship, you need to go to a restaurant. Actually, what's actually easier, you can go to a specialty restaurant and make reservations for any other specialty restaurant. But what's actually easier is on the Royal Promenade, look for a crew member standing behind a kiosk. They're usually one right by Sorrento's or by the pub, somewhere in that ballpark. But anyway, look for somebody who's standing in front of a kiosk that says like specialty restaurant reservations or restaurant reservations. Go there, they can make it for you. They have a laptop usually, and they can make them for you over there. But you have to wait till you get on board the ship. At some point this year, that's going to change, but it hasn't changed as of the recording of this podcast, so I'm giving the information that's current as of now. We're all super excited for our first Royal Caribbean cruise experience. Would greatly appreciate any advice you provide. Thanks for all the great insight you provided through the podcast and through RoyalCaribbeanBlog.com. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And our last question today is coming to us from, I don't see a name in here. Oh, it's from Mark Cavanaugh from Salem, Oregon. Hi, Matt. My wife and I, along with my mom, will be on Harmony out of Galveston. We've been on Royal Caribbean many times, but there are a few firsts on this cruise, so we're so excited. Number one, my wife and I are now Diamond. Congratulations. This is a big step. Number two, first time on Harmony. We've been on Oasis a few years ago. Number three, our last three cruises on Royal Caribbean were charters for the Star Trek the cruise. Although we were in the cruise points, we didn't get any Crown Anchor benefits. A charter is very different than a regular cruise. We look forward to a normal cruise. Number four, this is our first time out of Galveston. Number five, our first Western Caribbean cruise. Have done several Eastern Caribbean cruises. And number six, first time my mom shares a balcony cabin with us. Her first and only other cruise was sharing an ocean view cabin. Thanks for the podcast. Listen, going to Diamond is probably the most notable change here. I was talking to some friends over the weekend about what a difference it really does make when you get to Diamond, because you get those free drinks primarily. It's like a mini drink package you get for free. You know, four free drinks a day. That really adds up. It's really nice to have that. So I would definitely say, Mark, that's going to be the biggest thing I think you're going to notice. You know, cruising out of Galveston, there's going to be some nuances there. Doing not a charter, some notable differences there, obviously. And obviously sharing a cabin with your mom. You know, those are all things I think that are more nuanced as opposed to Diamond. And you said it, this is a big step. Now, whenever anybody listening to this, don't cruise to get the Diamond set. Don't cruise to get points. Don't cruise to get status. That's the wrong thing to do. But when you're within the point threshold for Diamond, you know, maybe sneak in one more cruise for the sake of it, but I wouldn't necessarily start booking cruises specifically for Diamond status, but it really does make a nice difference when you can get there, because you get the free drinks, a free day of internet. It does add up. It's a nice benefit there, Mark. So thank you for sharing your email. Thank you, everybody, for checking out this episode of the podcast. If you want to send me your emails, you can always do so by sending your emails to Matt, M-A-T-T, at RoyalCaribbeanBlog.com. Until next time, I'm Matt. We'll talk again real soon.